Joining me on the hotline right now from the Boston Globe, he had a great column yesterday, which is why I wanted to get him on. It actually kind of relates to this. That would be Jeff Jacoby. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing? You know, never mind Tom Brokaw. I got to say, anybody who opens a segment of the show with some Dean Martin is okay in my book. I want you to know about, I don't know when it was that he died, maybe 95, 96. I actually wrote a column when Dean Martin died saying that I had always wished, you know, some people my age, you know, wish that they could step into Bruce Springsteen's shoes, or that they could, you know, I don't know, you named the singer that they idolized. I always wished I had a voice like Dean Martin. And I actually wrote a whole op-ed column just about the glory that was Dean. So there are some of us
really?
Who still appreciate it.
Oh, listen, what's better than Dean? There's nothing better than Dean Martin. Come on, give me a break. The guy's just, and he just stood there. Remember, if he could have that glass of scotch or whatever
right.
it was and the
yeah.
smoke in his hand, and he was just.
Just the cigarette and the kind of, you know, sleepy eyes and that whole slouchy manner and just this gorgeous voice. I always wished I could emulate it. I sometimes fool myself when I'm in the shower and thinking that I'm coming close, but it only works when nobody else is listening.
Yeah, well,
but, you know, Winter Wonderland, does Al Gore know about that?
That brings us to your column. I'm trying to get to your column
like
here.
I did that?
I like that. Jeff writes this column on Sunday, and Glenn Reynolds links to it, which is automatically like 10 million people are going to be coming to you and reading your column. But the scope and that's why I played the Brokaw thing as well. Here's Tom Brokaw talking about, you know, that clearly, before we get to your column, is that not God's way of telling you you're making too much money? If you can at the beginning of what could be a horrible recession, think that it's a great idea to teach consumers a lesson by raising gas taxes.
What's the right word? It's so elitist. It's so tone deaf for somebody who makes as much money as Tom Brokaw makes, somebody who wouldn't feel the pinch even if gas prices rose to $14 an hour, to be announcing that it would be a great idea if you tax gasoline high enough to get it back up to $4 a gallon, because then you would signal to the consumers that those days are over. Well, just look around. Those days aren't over. Why is it the job of the government to make life more difficult for people who are, as it is, you know, suffering through tough times? It looks like they're going to be growing even tougher. It's just appalling. A day after the report comes out about how a million fewer people have jobs than was the case, what was it, a year ago?
Yeah, a year ago.
And here he is saying, let's raise all their bills. Let's go back to the point where, you know, it's going to be even more of a struggle for them to get to work or to get their kids to school. It's just incredible. And you know what else is also so insane about it? Can you tell that I have strong feelings on this subject? On the one hand, you hear the demand constantly from so many on the left or in the green movement, let's raise the price of gasoline, increase the taxes, because the more expensive gasoline is, the more likely people will be to conserve and to drive less. But with the very next breath, they insist that automobiles have to be made more fuel efficient, which has exactly the opposite impact. If you cut the price of gasoline in half, it means that you can go twice as far by spending the same amount of money on gasoline. If you double the fuel efficiency of your car, it means you can go twice as far by spending the same amount of money on gasoline. The impact of making cars more fuel efficient is that more driving takes place, not less. It's one of these mysteries to me why that seems to be so difficult for so many people to grasp. Tell me you grasp it.
I can't figure out how, as you say, on the one hand, they seem so concerned with our welfare, and yet on the other hand, they are so willing to take the regular Joe and tax their cigarettes, tax their beer, tax their gasoline.
And it's all for their own good.
Yeah, it's for our own good for sure. So this column that Jeff writes, by the way, and there was a link on my website to it yesterday. If not, I'll put another one up today, is essentially that this global warming conference that is about to come up may be less about global warming than it is about global cooling. Explain the substance of the article and why a guy like Glenn Reynolds, who, by the way, like me, we do not believe this global warming, that man causes the global warming garbage. Explain why it's your feeling that the next global warming conference may be more on, hey, maybe this global warming thing isn't accurate after all.
Well, so what I wrote about is an upcoming conference. It's taking place in New York in a couple of months. The 2009 International Conference on Climate Change. Now, they have these conferences about climate change all the time. What's different about this one is that it's bringing together dozens, maybe well over 100 scientists and experts and scholars in climate science and related fields who, while they have plenty of differences among them, all are in one way or another skeptical about the whole climate change alarmist scenario. They don't believe that global warming is a crisis or that it's a looming catastrophe. At least some of them believe that we're headed for a period of global cooling, not global warming. And if there's one thing that they all agree on, it's that the idea that there may not and must not be any further debate or discussion about whether and how the climate is changing and what impact the human activity may be having on it, that it should be shut down. So there's this conference being convened, which is going to have some of the top names in the field, including from here in the Boston area, people from Harvard, for example, or Richard Lindzen from MIT, who is one of the world's leading climate scientists. You hear it over and over again. The science is settled. There's a consensus on this. If anybody tells you that they have a question about it, then they're, says Al Gore, then these are like people who think that the moon landing was a creator on a sound stage in Hollywood. And yet, you just look at the lineup of speakers and presenters and keynoters that are planned for this thing, and if people go to your column, that'll lead them to the links that I put into mine. They'll see that these are some of the leading people at top scientific institutions who publish in peer-reviewed journals all the time, and more it seems to me you're hearing people say this is not a closed question. There are definitely big things that we've got to figure out, and before we go and radically transform our economy to try to prevent something that may or may not be A, occurring, or B, a disaster if it does occur, maybe we ought to get to know the science a little bit better.
You know, I wonder if part of it is the current state of the economy. I don't know. In fact, the fact that you have Richard Lindzen, who's going to be at this particular speech at MIT, Professor Lindzen has been running this campaign for some time now, saying, guys, this is not, I'm not saying it is, I'm not saying it isn't, this is not a settled question, and the science that you're using to prove your point, that would be global warming, is flawed beyond belief. We need to study this more, and the science that you guys are using should be chucked in the garbage can. He's one of your keynote addresses. That tells me that the rest of the scientific community may in fact be waking up. I'm glad you pointed to this.
I think part of it might be the economy. As things get economically worse and more difficult for people, there's going to be less and less appetite to be forcing changes on everyone that's going to make life even more expensive. But I think part of what may be happening is that for 10 years now, there has been no measurable increase in average global temperatures. Global warming, so-called, peaked in 1998. That was the highest recorded temperature in the atmospheric global temperature of the Earth. Since then, it's never gone above that amount, and by some measures, it has now declined so far that all of the increase from 1979 has basically been wiped out. So I think that there are simultaneously going to be two things happening. One, as the assuming that this continues, and as it becomes clearer and clearer year by year that the catastrophic warming that we've been hearing about simply isn't happening, then you're going to find more and more people open to the message of the skeptics, which is take another look at this. The science isn't clear. The computer models that it's based on are flawed. There's a lot that we still don't know about this. But at the same time, I think what we will also see is an increasingly frantic demand by the alarmist wing that all debate be shut down, that they get their way, and that the money be pumped into the things that they want the money pumped into, because they know that if the temperatures continue to fall, it's going to be harder and harder for them to make their case. So they got to get it locked in now, before the temperatures have changed so much that they've lost their opportunity.
The article is called Skepticism on Climate Change, and the conference is the 2009 International Conference on Climate Change that's going to take place in New York. Are you going to go and report on it?
It's possible. Yeah, I haven't decided yet, and I got to make sure that, you may have heard I'm working for an industry that's dying, and funny how the travel budgets seem to always dry up when there's an opportunity to go to something like this. But I'm going to see if I can do it.
Well, it would be great if you did. We're in the same boat. The media is under fire. I do find it pretty interesting that Tom Brokaw is slamming CEOs yesterday for making too much money.
Yeah, I got to imagine that he's not too worried about whether he's going to have enough money to see himself through retirement or you know, whether he's going to have to go get a second job.
I'm thinking he's not worried about how much the production assistant's making, too, that helps him put together his show.
Hey, Jim, I've got a campaign for you to launch. Does Connecticut still have the highest gasoline tax in the country?
We do indeed.
I've argued for years, and at one point I actually got the local petroleum, what do they call it, the Massachusetts Petroleum Council or something, to pass around decals to all of their member service stations. If you notice, the only tax that we pay that is never publicly recorded is the gasoline tax. When you go to the store, right on your receipt, it says how much the tax was. And a lot of other things, you order something online, and it'll list the tax right there. It's routine for the tax to be known. The only exception that I know of is gasoline. And when you go to fill up at the gas pump, what it always says is all taxes included. It doesn't actually ever say how much that tax is. So I've been urging for the longest time that gas station owners ought to put signs right on their pump that indicate how much the gasoline tax is. Let people know that they're paying 35, 45, 55 cents for every gallon of gas that they buy, and that it's going to the government, not into their tank.
Let's. I run out of time, but I think we should start that campaign. I'll send you an email. Maybe we can get something going. How'd that
Excellent.
Be?
Excellent.
Jeff Jacoby from the Boston Globe. The link to his article will be up on the website in about 2 minutes. Jeff, thanks for joining me very
Always
much.
Always fun. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Take care.